This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And Bob is Bob Shorey. He's one of the MCSEs here at Tab. He comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Usually the first hour is easier than the second. And we are of course, broadcasting live over at WTIC's Facebook page, a little Facebook Live for you. And it looks like Bob and I wore the same shirt.
Well, a little different. Mine's darker gray than yours.
I think my wife uses more bleach. So we're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online, and we'll do our best to help you out. So you guys have been, you know, we've had our power issues here in Connecticut. As we know, our legislature has done a nice job of regulating Eversource to the point where we can't afford our power, and they really can't put it back together when it falls apart. So we'll thank our legislature for that. In California, Tesla owners were asked to charge their cars less in California, a message requesting a reduction in supercharging and home charging use between 4 p.m. and 9 p.m. each day is popping up on Tesla touchscreens due to heat waves. So who would have thunk it? You'd have some heat waves in California. And California, as you guys know, had the rolling blackouts happening because there wasn't enough power in California because they, like Connecticut, chose to use a lot of quote-unquote green energy out there in California, which, of course, there's not enough green energy to power the amount of folks who need to power stuff. And what happens when that happens? You have rolling blackouts, of course. So it'll be coming to Connecticut soon because we follow exactly what California does. And so we'll be expecting, you know, rolling blackouts by the time we get to our 30% of green energy that the legislature is pushing here in Connecticut. So it's just waiting for us down the line. But if you're running a Tesla out there, you make sure you're going to get a pop-up that says, make sure you don't charge your car unless you have these windows to do it because you're causing issues for the grid. And makes sense because, you know, Teslas use plenty of power to charge the batteries that are built into the vehicle. And so keep that in mind. It could be coming here. It will be coming here. I mean, put it this way. We've witnessed our electric bills going the way they've been going thanks to our legislature and our governor. And we're going to find the same exact problems as far as outages and rolling blackouts because the same folks that are managing our electric grid can't figure out how to tax a rotisserie chicken. So you're probably going to have the same problem with your power here. I warned you first, folks. It shouldn't be a surprise, but you know, I'm sure it will be. Here we get another quick breaking news. California grid operator warned of power shortages as energy transitioned to clean energy. That's another article. I found it interesting because Gavin Newsom was saying he's the governor in California how just awful it is and unacceptable it is that rolling blackouts are occurring. And of course, the grid operator is saying, guys, we're going to have shortages as we transition to clean energy. Duh.
We got to buy those Tesla power walls to store it.
Yeah, well, you need to again the whole big wall there, Bob.
Yeah, but you got to charge them first.
That's true. But you put solar panels on your roof there. So what do you got, Bob? What do you got going on?
Oh, I got some good ones this week. Okay.
Yeah.
This is a CNET article.
Sure.
UVC wands kill viruses. They're also a major safety issue.
Sure. Yeah.
The invisible light can kill viruses and pathogens like the ones that causes COVID-19.
Right.
But experts are raising alarms about potential safety risks. And they're talking specifically, there's a bunch of companies putting out these UV lights wands that kind of look like a lightsaber.
Oh, sure. That's fun.
Well, it doesn't have the part that comes out.
Does it make a noise?
No. At least I don't think so.
No, that would be more
fun,
too.
I didn't review any of them, but they're in this article.
Yeah.
So anyway, the point is that UVC rays that will kill all this bacteria,
right.
It alters the DNA and RNA, that's in which is the genetic makeup of cells,
right.
And stops them from reproducing.
Mm-hmm.
So these this light can cause cancer.
Right.
Okay. But the problem with the wands is you can wand yourself.
Yeah, by accident. You want to keep away from that.
So they can also ruin your eyes. They can just
Not good.
Ruin your eyes. Yeah, you get them in the eyesight. So they put little safety guards so that when they're not pointed down,
right,
they turn off or something. But
yeah,
the point is, it's just too easy to accidentally expose your, you know, yourself to these UVC rays. So they're warning against them.
Right.
So there's a lot of them coming out. Plus, there's a standard that they use,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of them are not abiding by the standard. They're creating their own standards.
Oh, great.
So rather than them all being the same,
right,
they use a different standard, and some of them are really the big manufacturers. So you can get the stand-up units that rotate the air in your room,
mm-hmm,
and some of them are by use standards, and some of them have HEPA filters, and
mm-hmm,
they do a number of other things.
Yep.
So this is a good article if you want to talk about putting something in your room to sanitize,
right,
against the COVID-19, which is a big deal.
Or any virus, for that matter.
MERS and SARS and actually also bacteria.
Right, but didn't they have another thing with a fan that made a lot more sense?
Well, yeah, I didn't actually print that one, but I got it up here on my screen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I can say this on
the
air.
Yeah, you shouldn't. Well, it is the manufacturer, I'll say it. The company's called Big Ass Fans.
Okay.
That's the name of their company.
So anyway, UV light and coronavirus, this company, my BAF,
yeah,
might have a solution.
Right.
The ceiling fan uses UV lights to kill up to 99.9% of a room's airborne pathogens in minutes.
That's beautiful.
It's now being tested against the virus that causes COVID-19.
Right.
So there's some pictures of it. They're very attractive ceiling fans.
Sure.
And what they do basically is they put these UVC lights so that they're mounted on the top of the fans.
Right.
The fans pull the air in the room up.
Right.
Instead of down. So then the air goes over the UVC lights,
right,
which sanitizes them, and then the ceiling kind of redeflects it back down, the sanitized air, and then the any air that with pathogens goes back up.
Yeah.
So it can do a room of, I forget what the size is, I think about 400 and some square feet in,
right,
about 10 minutes and clean about 99.9% of pathogens.
Nice.
So, but they're very expensive because they're fans without the UV. Goes for about $1,500, and
so that's not bad.
You're gonna pay about an additional $250 to $500 more.
Oh, that's a no brainer.
So,
in the era of COVID, that's a no brainer.
Yeah,
$200 to upgrade your fan to be a sanitized room.
So it's the standard UV non-UV model started about $1,250, and the UV lights add about $500, which would be about $1,750.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, it kills 99.9% of viruses, bacteria, mold, and other harmful airborne agents that pass through the disinfection zone,
nice,
the company promises. So that's pretty interesting.
That sounds like a good idea, and it sounds like a no-brainer, especially if you're going to put a big fan in a restaurant or in a hotel or what have you. It's a very easy fix, and if it does do that good a job at killing any viruses in the air, why wouldn't you just do it?
So they put their engineers to work at developing this thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they started working on it. I guess they got to about 10 or 15% or so of the development.
Right.
And then somebody's light went on and said, hey, we already developed this for hospitals in Rwanda.
There we go.
So,
they got some pretty nasty stuff they were fighting down there, right? SARS and MERS down in Africa.
Right.
So
they found that they already had it 99% already
done.
Developed.
Yeah.
So, you know.
This seems like a no-brainer. We'll put a link up to this article. And, it seems like a very simple thing to do.
They're ramping up production. And I think they're hoping to get these out to, like, schools and office buildings.
Why not?
You know?
Office buildings, hotels, restaurants. I mean, you could – if you're going to blow away all the viruses within the air, you could go back to 100% capacity, right? Because you're taking care of the air.
Right.
So you're not –
if it does it in a room – you know, let's say every 500 square feet you put in a fan.
Right.
You know, you could do some big rooms.
Exactly. Really easy.
Very quick.
So that's really good news. I'll put a link up there for that. Another quick story. It's actually hit locally here. Tens of suspects arrested for cashing out Santander ATMs using a software glitch. So if you have a Santander ATM card, you probably had a big warning that The FBI and local police have made tens of arrests across the tri-state area this week as part of a crackdown against multiple criminal gangs who were exploiting a glitch in the software of Santander ATMs. And the other issue is, of course, you know how safe is it for you to be withdrawing money from a Santander bank? Because you could find there's a lot of folks kind of milling around trying to take advantage. They're using fake debit cards. Here's a South Windsor Police Department tweet. We have been made aware of an ATM scam in which suspects are using Santander Bank ATMs to fraudulently withdraw cash using fake debit cards. Since we have a branch in town, 1765 Ellington Road, we are asking any citizens using their ATMs to use caution when withdrawing money. So the Santander says they fixed the glitch, but, I mean, that's another example of, technology and banking and issues as far as doing some testing as to how things work before you let it go. These glitches were actually made. They were selling the glitches on the dark web to people, but eventually somebody spilled the beans and let everybody know how the glitch worked. So then everybody started running out and hitting these ATM machines. But the glitch has been fixed, guys. So if you're listening to a News Talk radio station, well, most criminals aren't. But if you are, you can't get the money there anymore.
That well is dried up.
That's all gone. So we're going to be here until 11 o'clock, guys. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. And we're on live over at Facebook, over at WTIC's Facebook page if you want to check out our matching shirts, right, Bob? We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We have one line open for you, so thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning. Because you have, let's get right to work here and try to help you out. Let's go first to Paul in Litchfield. What's going on, Paul?
Good morning. I use Proton Mail.
Yeah.
And they have a free VPN.
Sure.
So I picked that up, too.
Nice.
Long story short, every time I fire up Proton VPN, I get this message saying, you have a proxy server running.
Right.
And the first time I got that message, I'm like, okay, what are we doing here? And I figured out how to find it, and I disabled it. And
right.
Everything was good that day.
Yep.
Next day, turn on the computer, turn on Proton VPN, you have a proxy server running. Go back
right.
through the settings, turn off the proxy. Is there any way I can disable it permanently? I mean, seems like Windows keeps turning the stupid thing on, and I don't know why.
Oh, it's a Windows proxy you have, huh?
Yeah, because it's coming out of Windows 10.
Interesting. But you is this in a business or at home?
No, it's at home.
Okay. Are you running OpenDNS?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Most likely, that's your snag. That's your proxy, believe it. Yeah, I know. It's a catch 22 there, Paul. It's actually causing some issues here for you. And you have to do is you have to authorize as an acceptable site the Proton VPN because it's actually seeing it as a way for you to defeat what OpenDNS is doing for you. Because the moment you go on through a VPN, right, this is how the kids at schools were getting around the school's filtering. They were using VPNs to go ahead and connect to their home computers and surf whatever they wanted to from within the schools because with that VPN connection, they could do whatever they want because they would pop out at their home machine and then they would surf, avoiding the proxies and the filtration that was built in. So that's what's happening. Your two security technologies are battling with each other. You have to authorize Proton VPN within your settings of OpenDNS. And I can try to find an article that'll give that to you because you're not alone issue. And that's what I'll probably try to find a post for you on Computer Talk because but that's the issue is your DNS filtration is not liking that you're trying to use a VPN.
Gotcha. It's like, okay, I turn the stupid thing off. It works fine all day long. And I wake up the next morning, turn the computer on. I says, guess what? I'm back.
Yeah.
I mean, right? And you, it's just Groundhog Day.
Yeah, they want you there. It's exactly doing – both things are important for you for security. And we just have to show you how to allow Proton to go through your OpenDNS configuration just by allowing it through the settings. Do you have an account with OpenDNS?
I don't believe so. I believe I'm using just a freebie.
Well, the freebie is still fine. You need an account, though, to do these configurations. Yeah, so if you've just put in the DNS settings, that's probably your snag.
All right.
So get an account going, and we'll try to find a link for you as far as how to allow that VPN. Okay, Paul?
Thanks a lot. Have a great day, guys.
You too, sir. All right, we're going to be here till 11 o'clock, and feel free to get online. We'll have a couple lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll do our best to help you out with computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns until 11, and then Dr. Lessie will be in with Healthy Rounds. He'll give you a second opinion on your health advice, and you can also stick around for Garden Talk. Len and Lisa will be here at noon, so stick around here at WTIC. We'll be right back. Back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're here until 11 o'clock. We got one line open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. And so what we're trying to do for the last caller is to try to figure out a way to allow for his VPN tunnel to go through OpenDNS. Now, like I mentioned, it's you're defeating your own security by doing it, right? So when you go in through a VPN, the DNS you're going to probably end up using is going to be on the DNS provided by the VPN. Not your secure DNS provided by OpenDNS. And so OpenDNS is saying, look, I don't want you to go ahead and connect with a VPN. It's not secure. So the idea is it's trying to protect you from breaking through your own security. So we're trying to find a solution for that. Again, it's your router. You should have a way to whitelist the IP addresses that are part of that Proton VPN. But be aware, now when you're surfing, through that VPN, you're using that third party's DNS queries. And again, the security is a question mark, right? Because, and again, we're hoping Proton is not doing anything to capture your searches. But when you poke out at the Proton VPN side of the equation and you're surfing on their system, you're going to use their DNS. And are they going to record your DNS queries? I don't know. They're not supposed to, right, Bob? But they could. So again, understand that your connection is secure. No one's going to be able to see or know where you're going on the internet while you're connected, but where you popped out knows where you're going.
So it's not so much secure as it is anonymous.
It's anonymous, sort of, because again, the VPN provider knows who you are.
Well, that's true.
So nothing's anonymous on the old... information superhighway here. So just keep that in mind. Let's go on to Ken in Windsor next. What's going on, Ken?
Okay, this is sort of another privacy issue. I started using MailChimp to send out email, and I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's similar to Constant Contact.
Yeah.
And I was surprised the data that it can collect on the emails I send out. It can tell me who opened it, when they opened it, how many times they opened it.
Yeah.
If I had links in that email, it would tell me if they used any of the links in the email.
Yep.
So my question is, whenever you send an email to someone, what privileges does that give you as far as continued access to that email or the email, the client you're sending it to, his email, and can that be blocked or otherwise controlled somewhat so people aren't constantly watching your inbox and seeing what you're doing?
Well, they're not watching the inbox. They're watching the message, what happened to it. So when I send a proposal to a customer here at Tab, I know when they've opened that proposal. And that's handy because, you know, if somebody says, hey, I didn't get your proposal, I can say, well, I saw that you opened it on this date, so
right,
maybe you forgot you got it. I can't see their inbox. I can only see what they did with what I sent them. And that's the thing about a marketing system like MailChimp. It's designed to do email marketing. And so you want to know what percentage of your emails are being opened. We don't do any kind of email marketing here at Tab. I find it distasteful. You'll know whether or not you had a subject line that got people to open the message. So you'll know what percentage was open, what percentage was read. And that's why the MailChimp technology is out there. But if you just send an email to somebody else, like me, using a regular mail provider, you could configure it to have a read receipt, right? So you'll know if I read the message. And that's okay. There's nothing security-wise going on there. You don't know what I have in my inbox other than you know if I've read your message or not.
Well, you don't really know if you read it.
It opened it.
You know if it was open.
Right.
Because you might have opened it and not read it.
Exactly. Good point.
Well, I used to use that in the corporate world, and I would like to do that actually from home now, where if I send an email in the corporate world, I could retrieve it and cancel it before the other person reads it if I discover there's an error in there or something, or the information was bad.
Yes and no. So certain systems would allow you to withdraw the message, and certain systems wouldn't. So if you're sending a corporate message within your corporation, within your email exchange server, within your own mail server, you had a whole lot more power than when you delivered it to me and it ended up on my mail system. Guess what? You could beg all you wanted to get that back. You're not getting it back.
Okay. That's what I thought. It was just because we had our own mail server and everybody was working off that same server. We could do those things.
Exactly. And that's where you have the power. So when it's disparate and disconnected, you know, you've given it to my post office. It's gone to me. You can't take it back. I could give it to you. You could request it, and I could give it back to you, and I could pinky swear that I wasn't going to read whatever craziness you sent me.
Yeah. Hey, something I heard on the news today or yesterday that really piqued my interest is I've been getting so much junk email, and I've been clicking on the unsubscribe link at the bottom of the page, and now they're saying don't ever do that because it could be a malicious link.
Correct. It could be, and that is a problem, right? So that's why you run OpenDNS so that your web defenses would kick in there on that malicious link and not allow you to get compromised.
It also confirms to the people that sent it to you that they have a legitimate email address.
Oh, yeah. And I know what they do then is they don't send you something. They give it to somebody else or sell it to somebody else, and they start sending to you.
Right. But if it's a legitimate company, let's say you went and bought something at such and such furniture store, let's say, and then they start sending you sale after sale after sale email, you can comfortably opt out of that stuff and understand that they will remove you from the list. So you can reduce your mail from legitimate companies. It's the ones that are illegitimate that you should be wary of.
Well, is it better just to block that email address or report it as spam?
Yep.
And then, okay, because that was one of the recommendations they said is, well, the extreme would be to have a whitelist, and that takes a long time to develop a whitelist.
Right.
But you can always build a blacklist. There's unlimited opportunity for that.
Exactly.
Okay, very good.
All right. Good luck, Ken.
All right. Thanks again, guys.
Our pleasure. All right. Let's move on to Arthur in Cromwell next. What's going on, Arthur?
Hello. How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure. What's up?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you gentlemen for how diligently and vigilantly you come on every weekend. I enjoy the knowledge that you share with us, and also enjoy your humor.
We do our best. Thank you, sir.
And I am a technological dinosaur, so that's why I like the way you deal with people like me. I have a laptop, and I just use it for checking emails or either... And I don't surf the web with it, but I'm going to be taking some courses online.
Nice.
So I need I need some malware or some type of antivirus, and I was wondering which one is the best to buy, or is there something out there free I can download?
Well, we would start recommending free these days. In the old days when we started 25 years ago, free was okay. Nowadays, the threats are so much more real that you need to pay for professional antivirus. We recommend Webroot, Webroot.
Okay.
And it's $2 a month, about $25 a year. So it's not expensive, and it'll do a very good job. We actually have it on about 8,000 systems in our client base. Works really well.
So now I just Google web route and go to their website, or?
Yeah, you can just go to their website and just purchase the home edition of it, and you can pay for it monthly, or you can pay for it annually, I think. And that'll be a great way to protect your computer. The other thing you should consider is configuring OpenDNS, but I'm sure you've heard that numerous times on the program.
Yeah, I heard it, but I don't know how to do it, so I'm going to go with the most simplest thing. Is webroot, that's what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, so think of webroot as the vaccine that we're looking for COVID. That's what webroot is. It's going to find an infected piece of software and try to kill it, right? Whereas OpenDNS, if you really believe in masks, OpenDNS would be the mask or the 6 feet of separation, right? It's going to block you from coming in contact with the problem in the first place. And that's a very powerful way to keep you from becoming infected. So we have plenty of instructions on how to configure OpenDNS that anyone can do it. It's not that hard. You really can't break anything. Maybe you could, but you really should. You shouldn't be able to break anything. And I promise you, you'll be much more safe when you surf, because the antivirus will have much less to do.
Okay, so OpenDNS, just go to your computer talk or tab, and there'll be a link there?
Yep, there'll be some links as to how to configure it on your computer. It's nothing to purchase. It's just some settings. You're taking the DNS settings from your internet provider and replacing them with OpenDNS, which is a Cisco company, which is going to have much more safe IPs for websites that you can go to. They're going to block you from going to the malicious sites. They're going to force you to be 6 feet away. They're going to force you to keep from somebody spraying on you, if that makes any sense.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy your opening commentary, because you'd be spot on with what you're saying. And I just really enjoy you all.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you being out there, sir.
Thank you, and stay safe.
Yep, you too.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. We're going to step out for a quick break, get back to more of your calls. We've got a couple lines open, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Everything we've talked about is posted over at Computer Talk with Tab. Mike G is working feverishly to get it out there for you over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. We post it on our Facebook page. If you follow us at Tab Computer Systems and Mark Zuckerberg deems the news worthy, it might get into your newsfeed. You can follow us right here on WTIC's Facebook page as well. If you place a little comment following us on the Facebook Live, Mark Zuckerberg will see that it has some value and it'll get out there to other folks. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We got three lines open, I think, for you guys. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Before we go to your calls, I want to bring up a quick article that we've been kind of following for years, actually. Of course, out in old California, Uber and Lyft, they're really under attack by California legislature because of their model. If you're a gig worker, you've chosen to download your Uber app and you've decided to make some extra money using your own vehicle whenever you want to. You're your own person. You can go ahead and pick up a fare thanks to the app, and you get a chunk of money based on how that calculation works. And then you can go to your full-time job, or it could be your own full-time job. It's really up to you. Well, California wanted to make you an employee of Uber or Lyft, which would make the model very expensive. It would make it almost impossible for Uber and Lyft to do what they're doing. And so there was this court order back and forth where California was going to make Uber and Lyft make every employee, every person who downloaded the app an employee of Uber as of midnight last night, I guess. And there was another court that said, nah, we're not going to do that. Yeah, we're going to stay that order.
That was going to take effect on this past Thursday.
Yeah.
So, and we talked about it last week, but this is an update.
This is an update.
They got to stay.
The order was stayed. Now, here's the reason it was stayed, I would contend, because Uber and Lyft said, all right, fine. You know what? We're not going to make them employees. We'll make them franchisee owners. So if you go to the franchise model, and the more I thought about that, the more I felt that that's what the current did to me as a paper boy, because I had to purchase their papers, right? I had to purchase them, and I got the delta of what I collected from my client, the other end user at the house. I got the delta, the profit. So I think that's kind of how the current got around this issue of making me an employee even though it was a gig solution, they, I have my little franchise. Here's your route, and you'll buy the papers, and then you'll bring us the money, and you know, you keep the difference.
Well, if they had to pay you as an employee.
The Current would have been dead 20 years ago.
Yeah, they would have had to pay you minimum wage.
Right.
Plus health
benefits.
Healthcare benefits, plus paid vacations.
Right.
Time off.
Right.
Okay. And all the taxes and all of that.
Oh, yeah, all the FICA taxes and Medicare
Social
and Social
Security.
Yeah. So, of course, the Current would be out of business.
Well, nobody would buy the paper because the paper, instead of costing, what was it when you did it?
I don't even, it was cheap. I don't know. Let's say it's a dollar for the daily. I don't even know what it was. I don't remember. We had six paper routes. We were getting up in the morning. I did it since I was 12 years old.
It's more expensive, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when I did papers, it was 55 cents a week.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I know it was cheap.
We got a nickel.
Right. Well, right. And the point is, you're right. The Current couldn't have sold the paper for they'd be out of business. And that's what California wants to do to Uber and Lyft. And Uber and Lyft are saying, oh, right. Okay, California. Well, we'll just change our model and say that these guys are franchisers. And that'll work. And they can go right around this new crazy law that just is targeting the gig economy out there in California. California is doing anything they can to destroy entrepreneurship, to destroy any kind of person's ability to do whatever they want to do.
But that whole law was initiated because of the union.
Yes. They want to make some more union employees.
Yes.
But it's a mess, guys. Whatever. Thankfully, there was a stay in Uber and Lyft. And again, I don't have any love for Uber or Lyft at all. I don't care if I don't have any stock in that, in their companies. The point is, they developed an app that allowed people to go ahead and make some extra money on their own. They chose to do it. Nobody made them download the app, for crying out loud.
Well, my son did that to make some extra money for a while. He had a regular job.
Right.
And then in the evenings when he didn't have anything to do,
right,
he would do the Lyft thing, or I don't remember.
The alternative was to play video games. We'll go out and make some money instead.
Yeah, exactly.
So
plus he got to write off his insurance and his gasoline and all of that.
Smart kid. Because he's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to your call. Let's go to Len in Burlington next. What's going on, Len?
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have a larger display connected to my laptop. It's been working fine for years.
Nice.
And I have the two displays duplicated. So yesterday, I don't know what I did. I bumped into something, and both displays rotated 90 degrees clockwise.
Isn't that fun?
So I didn't know how to fix it, so I do what I usually do when something goes wrong, and I rebooted the PC.
Right.
And sure enough, it fixed the laptop, but the auxiliary display is still rotated 90 degrees. So I went into the settings display, hoping I could click on display number 2 and rotate it.
Yeah.
But instead of 2 rectangles there's only 1. And it says 1/2, so I can't rotate just the larger one.
You've got them set up to display as 1. So what you need to do is you need to go into your display settings and set it to extended.
Set it
you bumped
now?
It pretty good.
Yeah. So in other words, I'm not going to be able to get it up on mine, but. Because I don't have anything attached to it, but
you have it configured as extended rather than.
You need to change it to extended instead of
shared.
Shared, yeah.
The other thing too is there is, if you did truly bump it, there are settings on the monitor itself that allow you to put it in an orientation.
That's Control Alt and one of the arrow keys, up or down arrow key, or left and right arrow.
Okay, when I did extended. Now I can't see the whole display on the laptop, and the other one says keep this display or not.
Well, it's going to give you amount of time to keep the to keep the change. Otherwise, it'll put it back. Because sometimes if you make a change, you can't see the screen at all. So, what you're going to need to do is kind of accept that. Click on each screen and set the resolution to where it should be.
Oh,
so you can. That should reorientate it so it'll fit within your parameters of your screen.
So typically, a laptop has a very high resolution today, and your desktop monitor that you've attached to it probably has a little bit lower screen resolution. So you need to find the one that's right for each one.
You're going to have to monkey with a little bit in those display settings.
Okay.
That's trial and error.
Try.
All right. You following us, though, Lynn? You have an idea?
What did you say about the Control-Alt?
Oh, yeah. Control-Alt.
Control-Alt and one of the arrow keys, usually up or down or left and right, will rotate the screen on a desktop.
Okay.
So you could try that.
But when I tried that, it did it to both.
Right. So that's not going to work for you.
Right. So monkey with the display settings as far as working on each one. You have to first identify which screens are which. Which screen is screen one? Which screen is the extended? You can extend it. You can also mirror it. It all depends on how you want to configure your display. Most likely you're extending is what you want to do.
Okay, I'll give it a try. Thank you.
All right, Len. You're welcome. All right, take it easy.
Have a good one.
So we're going to be here. We're going to be here till 11, helping you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Another real quick thing that I want to bring up as we have the outro going on here at the bottom of top of the hour. In a ruling, of course, in California, Amazon is liable for defective product injuries. A California court ruled. So basically, this woman, Angela, sued Amazon for negligence after a replacement laptop battery she purchased from Marketplace, a third-party seller, exploded and burned her. So this is going to be interesting if Amazon now becomes liable for all the junk they sell online and all the regular stuff they sell online. I got a feeling our prices are going to be going up on your Amazon purchases if they are held liable. We'll see what happens with that. But I'm sure the trial lawyers are happy about this, but we'll see what happens. We're going to step out for a quick break. This is Computer Talk with Tab. Jim and Joe and Sarah, hang on. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back.